we've been, for many reasons, this is a special time. I've been visiting in Chicago for 2 weeks now, and this evening's discussion will conclude a whole series, like a seminar that we've been doing on one chapter from Srimad Bhagavatam. We've been discussing chapter 13 from Canto 1, which is Dhritarashtra and the transcendental instructions he got from his brother Vidura, and what he did with those instructions and his achieving higher consciousness as a result. So that this is this concluding the chapter this evening. And tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., I'm in a car on the way to the airport to go to India. So I'm just about to make a pilgrimage to India. And it's also very nice to be back with all of you again. And it's a very joyful evening for me, at least. So I'd like to just give a kind of very overview summary of this chapter. I selected this chapter because it contains some very, very essential ideas that the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam presents. One very critical part of Srimad Bhagavatam is hearing it. Hearing it means that one has the good fortune of the association of someone like Shukadeva Goswami who can recite it, a sadhu. The sages of Naimisharanya, they didn't have Sutta Goswami to hear it from. But they had one who heard it from Sutta Goswami, or from Shukadeva Goswami. In the assembly where Maharaj Parikshit was sitting was Ramaharshan Sutta. Ramaharshan Sutta's position was that when Vyasadeva divided the Vedas into four segments, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda, there were many, many, many verses remaining. And of those remaining verses that came from the original Yajur Veda, those balanced verses he also compiled into the Puranas and the Itihasas. One of our acharyas, Jiva Goswami, identifies this right from the Shruti mantras, that actually, our modern scholars say one thing, the Shrutis themselves say another thing. The Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad is one of them, that says that actually the Puranas are as Vedic as the Vedas. Modern scholars say something else. The Puranas are modern, the four Vedas are Vedic. The Shruti mantras say the Puranas are as Vedic as the four Vedas because it came from the same body of shlokas. In any case, Vyasadeva entrusted each of the four Vedas to particular disciples who had their assistants who were keeping those. They were keeping them in their written form, but they were also memorizing them. They memorized them in eight different ways so they wouldn't forget them. Because you know what happens? Through passage of time, you forget things. That's one of the reasons that Vyas wrote everything down. But even when you write things down, you can sometimes misunderstand things that are written down. So they memorized them backwards and forwards and in different ways. There's rules of how memorization would take place. And Vyas entrusted the Puranas to Ramaharshan Sutta. And Ramaharshan Sutta's son was Sutta Goswami. So when it came to, there's some detail which I'll skip, but when it came to the sages of Naimisharanya, they knew that Kali Yuga was going to begin. They knew it astrologically, because you can calculate those things, just like when you can calculate, like very soon the month of Kartik is going to begin. That's why I'm going to India, so I can be in Vrindavan during Kartik and observe some part of Kartik Vrata. You can calculate that. It happens on the full moon. You can know when the full moon will come. You can know when the yugas will change, similarly, by astrological calculation. But they also knew by other understandings. Krishna had left the planet. And when Krishna came to this planet, he came to, what did Krishna come to do? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says why he comes. Pritranaya sadhunam, vinashaya cha duskritam. What's the other one? Dharma sangstapa narataya, sambhavami yuge yuge. So he had done his thing. Dharma sangstha. He had spoken Bhagavad Gita. That one was done. Pritranaya sadhunam, he had protected his devotees. Dinash, all the duskritis, they were taken care of. So Krishna left the planet. His purpose of his advent was completed, and Krishna had gone. So astrologically, and Krishna had left the planet, and also the symptoms of Kali Yuga were very evident. In the first canto, earlier than the 13th chapter, there's some indication what symptoms of the age of Kali were being noticed by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And very, very obvious signs were there. Right at the very beginning chapter, Mandaksa Manda Matayo, Manda Bhagya Hupandrata, it's described. People would quarrel with one another over nothing. And their memories would become weakened, their duration of life would become shorter, their quality of compassion would diminish. And above all, they were always disturbed. Age of Kali had shown itself. And so being very wise persons and great sages, naturally they were compassionate. So what they wanted to do was diminish the influence of the age of Kali by creating auspiciousness within the universe. As they say, the best defense is a good offense. They were going to create auspiciousness by performing a 1,000-year yajna. And when it came to that performance of yajna, Kali Yuga had begun, and so the efficacy of that yajna had diminished. In each age of mankind, there's a specific form of sacrifice that is best for achieving perfection. Just last night, we had one, just like here in Palatine, there's a Bhakti Riksha group, a group of adults that meet and discuss systematically Bhagavad Gita, that also the children meet in another part of the house. So yesterday, at Palatine, this is what the children learned. There's another one further north. So the children, I asked the kids, what did you learn today? We learned about the four yugas. So really, what are they? And they rattle them off. 1, 2, 3, 4. Pretty good. Kids are smart. You just absorb. So Satya Yug is the first of the four yugas. And in Satya Yug, the duration of life, how long is the duration of life? It's 100,000 years. Just like in this yuga, the maximum duration, more or less around 100 years, and it diminishes by a factor of 10. 100,000, 10,000, 1,000, then 100. So 100,000 years, the means for achieving perfection was by meditation. Just like described in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Ashtanga Yoga system. So we find that it wasn't an unusual thing for someone to take out 10,000, 20,000, 40,000 years of their life. It's like, you know, it's incomparable, say, for us, 40 years. I've been practicing Krishna consciousness, living in our temples and full-time practicing Krishna consciousness now for about 30 years. Prabhupada described for himself, of course, one may take it that this was his way of encouraging us, or stating in a very humble way, but he said, to perfect chanting Krishna's holy name took him 30 years. So if you're just beginning chanting and struggling with it, don't worry about it. Stay with it. So meditation was the process in Sati Yuga, and then in Treta Yuga, during the time of Ramchandra. What was the process for achieving perfection? Performance of yajna. And during Dwarpa Yuga, during the time that Krishna was present in Dwarpa Yuga, the recommended process for achieving perfection? Deity worship, archana, elaborate arrangements for worshipping deities in the temple. But those same processes, just although they are very nice to perform in Kali Yuga, the same fullness of efficacy is not there as in the other yugas. It's just like if you go to a pharmacy and you see some medicines on the shelf, you could ask the pharmacist, I'd like that one over there. But what's best is you have a prescription, and by a qualified physician who knows just exactly what your condition is, and he writes out your prescription, you give that to the pharmacist and he prepares it for you. Or you get the prescribed right thing. So the prescription for this age is the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nascheva, 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 Gatir Anyata. Very nice verses there, in which the chanting of the holy name, Harir Nama, is being recommended three times. Specifically, it's three times because the rule is in Sanskrit, when you say something twice, it's for emphasis. When you say something three times, it's absolute. Na asti eva, to add to it. There isn't an alternative. There isn't an alternative. There isn't an alternative. That means these processes that are effective for the other three ages, they're very nice to perform. Nice to have systematic deity worship, to have some process of Vedic sacrifice, to engage in some form of meditation. They don't have the same effect in this age of Kali as the chanting of God's holy name. And so when the sages of Naimisharanya were performing their yajna, they realized this counteracting of the age of Kali isn't having the effect that we had hoped for, because now we're in a different age. So we need something else, the process for this age. And so they requested Sutta Goswami to narrate Srimad Bhagavatam, because he had just heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. Besides, they wanted to hear it. But they understood this would create the effect that they wanted. Besides their own self-realization or God-realization, they would get the benefit for everyone else also, just to have this Bhagavatam narrated by the qualified person, Sutta Goswami. So this chapter 13 is introducing that same idea. There are several examples of it within the very same chapter that are expressing this point, that even you may be a very wise and learned and exalted personality like Vidura, although Vidura was born of a Shudrani, actually he was Yamaraj, who was cursed by Manduk Muni to take birth in a Shudra family. He was actually Yamaraj, getting a chance to come into this world and associate with Krishna. So he was a very exalted personality, but he became perfect in his realizations by hearing from Maitreya Muni, described in the beginning of the chapter. Through association with Sadhu, he became perfect. Then in turn, he came back to the royal palace in order to give his mercy to the members of the royal palace, and especially to Dhritarashtra, the old attached brother of his, whose days were very, very numbered, limited, as he describes to Dhritarashtra. You're practically dead. Your liver is failing, your teeth are falling out, you're coughing up mucus. Your whole body is breaking apart. Dhritarashtra, wake up. The death notice has been served. And you're still attached. Dhritarashtra, you're an exalted personality. Act like an exalted personality. And willingly leave the comforts of royal palace life and your dream that you'll become the king, which is finished. And in a, not just in a graceful way, but in an exalted way, give up your attachments to this temporary situation, which is about to be finished anyway, and give your full attention to the Supreme. And don't hesitate, leave at once, tonight, before the day breaks. And other strong things were said to Dhritarashtra. But he accepted the advice. He accepted the advice of Vidura, and his very chaste wife, Gandhari, accompanied him. And of course, Vidura had to accompany them also, because Dhritarashtra was blind and Gandhari was blindfolded. And they're going off into the forest, so he had to lead the way. And so in a very courageous, actually Dhritarashtra was a courageous man and a noble man, but his disgusting behavior was due to his attachments. And when his heart had changed by the instructions of Vidura, his exalted nature came out, and the disgusting part was to become purified by his activities of austerities and fixing his consciousness on the Supreme. So that's where we ended up this afternoon, and just now the concluding verses. Where we ended up was Yudhisthira, and in the next morning, Yudhisthira and Sanjaya, the assistant, devotee assistant of Dhritarashtra. Sanjaya was actually a very exalted soul also. He was a disciple of Vyasadeva, but as you know, he had this mystic ability that he could be in one place and see in detail something that's going on in another place and narrate it. That would be, that if you could find somebody like that, you'd understand they're pretty exalted individual, pretty extraordinary individual. But Sanjaya couldn't find Dhritarashtra, and Yudhisthira couldn't find Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, and they became very, very filled with anxiety. Imagine, a 100-year-old man that you're taking care of, he's just gone. No word. Didn't even take a suitcase. Just left. Where did he go? And so Narada comes, we discussed this afternoon, and gave very wonderful instructions about how to see the hand of time, or the force of time, the hand of the Lord, acting to bring persons together and in course of time separate them, all by his sweet will, and there's just nothing you can do about it, Yudhisthira. The Lord has his plan. You have your plan. You're religiously, very carefully looking after your uncle. But the Lord has his plan, and now he's gone. So you just carry on with your duty and leave the plan of the Lord to the Lord. Our duty is to render service to the Lord. The Lord's duty is, he is the controller. Leave the controlling to the Lord and the serving to yourself. So then he ends up by saying, in short time, he hints at the fact that Krishna will be leaving. Krishna has not yet left, but very soon the whole Yadu dynasty will be leaving. And he knows it perfectly well. Actually, Narada had this ability also to see into the future, because the concluding verses of the chapter, he describes what didn't happen yet. He describes exactly where Dhritarashtra has gone and in how many days it will be before Dhritarashtra leaves his body. 4 or 5 days, he says specifically. In 4 or 5 days, this is what's going to happen. He's gone to the southern range of the Himalayan mountains, and Saptatala region, which was a name given by the seven rishis. And there he will sit down and describes the practices that he'll undergo of first controlling his senses outwardly, and then inwardly controlling his senses, and eventually, in turn, focusing his full concentration on the Supreme Lord, so that he would understand his qualitative oneness with the Supreme. And then once accomplishing that, his concentration will become so intense that his body will just self-ignite, which is another pretty extreme exhibition of concentration. And Gandhari, seeing this happening, so in other words, he's telling Dhritarashtra, he's telling Yudhisthira, you won't even have to go into the forest and find his body and take care of his funeral. He'll be taken care of by his meditation. So don't worry. That part, that duty of yours will be taken care of. And Gandhari, being his unequaled chaste wife, also not having her sons anymore, and now not having her husband anymore, unto whom she was completely faithful, she will enter into that fire. And he describes their destination, that they will achieve the spiritual realm. And then Vidura, observing all of this, simultaneously feels great joy and also great lamentation and sorrow. Sorrow in this sense that the association of his elder brother would be gone. But of course, with great joy in his heart, knowing his destination. When one knows the destination of a soul, will be situated in a spiritual position, it's cause for great celebration. Some of you may know one of our ISKCON sannyasis named Gaur Govinda Maharaj, who was primarily responsible for the construction of the Bhubaneswar temple that you recently visited. So, some 3-4 years ago, he left his body in Mayapur. He left his body in the Holy Dham. One evening, just in the room where he was staying, he was describing Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan amongst his disciples. He was describing very, very confidential pastimes between Krishna and his loving devotees. And right in the midst of that Krishna Katha, he left his body in the Holy Dham. And same reaction from all the devotees. Great loss. Yet, if only I can leave my body in such a condition. In the Holy Dham, speaking Krishna Katha. If you've, and any of you also may have heard him speaking, or have heard tapes of his speaking, ecstatic, what he would chant, what he would describe, Krishna Katha. He was literally in ecstasy. Literally, not so to speak, but literally in ecstasy. Very, very, very advanced devotee. Born in Orissa and became a disciple of Srila Prabhupada when he once met him. The very interesting story of how he became Prabhupada's disciple. He was a householder and he had two children, or three children, and when his children were grown up and in care of their mother, with their full consent, he was a very, very religious person his whole life, and he wanted very much to find a spiritual master. But he was very determined to find the qualified spiritual master who could give him Krishna. So he went many different, much like Vidura, he went to many different places of pilgrimage. And when he reached Vrindavan, there's many sadhus in Vrindavan, and he associated with many sadhus. And when he met Srila Prabhupada, he has personally described this. Just from hearing him and being in his association the very same day, he was just very clear, I want to take initiation from A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Just like that. And so he became his disciple and dedicated the balance of his life to teaching the message of Krishna consciousness as it's been given from Srimad Bhagavatam through the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So one becomes, the idea then is one becomes sadhu by the association of sadhu. Or one becomes, in Dhritarashtra's case, he didn't become exactly sadhu because there are different stages of elevation. And the stage of elevation of letting go of one's material attachments, which one can do certainly progressively in the course of life, and fixing one's attention on the Supreme by, as Dhritarashtra did, by meditation process, that's one means of elevation. But this what Vidura glorifies the most is what the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam glorifies the most. And that is, the term that's used in the Srimad Bhagavatam is paradharma. Savai pungsang paro dharma yato bhaktir adhoksa jay ahoituki apratiyata yayatmasu prasidati. This is a very nice verse found earlier in the Bhagavatam that's describing what the whole of the Bhagavatam is doing. I'd like to spend a little time discussing that verse. Very wonderful verse. How is it that in the verse, the word is there, adhoksaja? What's the meaning of adhoksaja? Anyone can say?
Beyond ordinary senses.
Yeah, beyond ordinary senses. So how are you supposed to know something that's beyond your senses? You can't get out a telescope and see it, or microscope and find it that way with any of the senses, even extending your present senses in a magnified way. You can't perceive that which is beyond the senses. But Hoksanja is that supreme personality who exists beyond the senses. So how are you supposed to know that person? Vedaish Jusayavair Aham Eva Vedyo. Krishna says in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the purpose of the Vedas is to know him, but he's beyond the senses. So how are you supposed to know him? In that verse, the answer is supplied. You're to know him through the linking process, the yoga process of bhakti. Yato bhaktir adhoksajay. And that's the paradharma. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksajay. So by rendering devotional service, Narada gives his definition of what is devotional service. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite, from Narada, same person who came to take care of Yudhisthira's anxieties. Narada's teaching is that you can serve the one who is beyond the senses, who is the master of the senses. Rishikesha means the master of the senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. You can serve the master of the senses using these senses in the linking process of devotion, bhakti. So this is a simple definition of bhakti. Taking the very same activities that we do every day. Prabhupada taught us like this. Bhakti does not mean giving up your position. Just like in speaking to Arjuna. He didn't tell Arjuna, give up your position. Stop being a kshatriya and stop being a householder. Give up your ashram and give up your varna. Krishna didn't say that. Stay in your varna and stay in your ashram. But engage in your activity with your full dedication to the Supreme. That's what he said to do. Perform your prescribed duties and all the while think of me. Savai manat Krishna padara vindayo. One has to keep the mind fixed upon the Supreme Lord And that fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord comes by this linking process of serving Him, by hearing about Him, just as Maitreya did with Vidura. He narrated everything that he heard directly from Krishna. Maitreya heard directly from Krishna. Can't do better than that. He heard when Krishna was speaking to Uddhava just before leaving the planet. Krishna, this Uddhava Gita, the section of the Bhagavatam where Krishna is answering Uddhava's questions. Maitreya was there. And Maitreya heard everything. And then Maitreya passed that information on to Vidura, because Vidura was very eager to hear, and so Maitreya was eager to tell him everything that he learned with full realization. So this is the process of devotion unto the Supreme who is beyond the senses, by using our ears for hearing, our tongue for glorifying, our eyes for seeing the beautiful forms of the Lord, our hands for decorating the deity and performing with musical instruments the songs and glorification of the Lord. In this way we can use our senses in serving the master of the senses, who is actually beyond the senses, but still we can serve him. Then there's an important quality of that activity that's also described. Ahoituki apratiyata. And this ahoituki means without material motivation. Ketu means cause. Without any cause, without personal motivation. There is motivation in bhakti. The motivation in bhakti is a selfless motivation. That motivation in bhakti is, may the Supreme Lord be pleased by this activity. That's the expression of love. May the beloved be pleased by this act. And thereby, I will find happiness in knowing the happiness that the beloved has achieved. That's the happiness of love. That's the motivation of devotion, or in its pure state. So, ahoituki apratiyata yayatma suprasidati. This apratiyata means it cannot be checked by anything. When Narada is speaking to Yudhisthira, he tells Yudhisthira, don't go to the forest and try to find him. I told you even where he is in the forest. Don't go. Don't go, because it will be it'll just disturb the whole purpose that he's trying to accomplish. But here's another reason not to go. I can tell you, Yudhisthira, he is absorbed in meditation on the personality of Godhead. And as a result, there's nothing material that's going to distract him at this stage. That's apratiyata. No matter how many times you tug on his sleeve, he's not going to come. You plead with him, you cry, he won't come. He's absorbed, because he knows what his goal is. He has achieved that state. And very soon, he's going to leave his body. 4 or 5 days more, it's over. You wouldn't even get there in time. That's another reason not to go. Apratiyata. When devotional service, when love of God is manifest, there's nothing that can stop it. Nothing that can stop. Nothing material can stop that which is spiritual. Nothing can check it. Someone can try to stop you. But still, that love and devotion will carry on within the heart. And that's something that each of us can achieve. The message of the Srimad Bhagavatam is for everyone. The message of the Srimad Bhagavatam is for the Paramahamsas. That's described that this message is so exalted that it has no touch whatsoever with material qualities. Dharma pranjita kaitavotra, that verse is there. For attaining material position in life, the Bhagavatam is not describing how to do that. Bhagavatam is describing rather dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmasaranam satam. The paradharma is described in the Bhagavatam, how to achieve this exalted state. That is actually the purpose of life. This is another message of the Srimad. Janataga Viplava. Tadvagvisargo Janataga Viplava. This is a verse spoken by Narada to Vyas, that these words of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're for people in general. Janata. You've heard that word somewhere in India, right? So Janata, this is a Sanskrit word found in Srimad Bhagavatam. It means people in general. Janataga Viplava. Agha means just what it sounds like. Agha means horrible things. Janataga Viplava. The words of the Bhagavatam are therefore Viplava, for annihilating the disturbing experiences in the lives of people in general. From hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which means you associate with a saintly person who has properly heard Srimad Bhagavatam. Suta Goswami, he heard it from Shukadev. Suta heard it from Shukadev. Vidura heard it from Maitreya. And so on. The process of hearing this message from the realized soul means that one becomes decorated with great fortune. And when one hears that message, it alleviates from the heart all the misgivings of material existence. So this is the process recommended for this age of Kali. These two things, Bhagavad Dharma, or Sankirtan Dharma for this age of Kali, includes the chanting of God's holy name and regularly hearing the message of words glorifying the personality of Godhead, particularly from this Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the instruction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. And we are doing our best to try to continue that very same message in disciplic succession. And very happy to once again be with all of you this evening to conclude the chapter of Dhritarashtra, taking the message from Vidura and making his life perfect. We should also strive like that. Regularly come together for kirtan like this evening, hear the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, worship Lord Jagannath, and take Jagannath Prasad together. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. So, any comments or discussion on this? Yes?
Maharaj, how come Sanjaya had no foresight into the disappearance of Dhritarashtra?
Well, how was it that Sanjaya had whatever abilities he had? He was given those abilities by Vyas because he had a particular service to perform. He had a service to perform for Dhritarashtra. If the ability that he had was for that particular service, and then in this other circumstance, that requirement was not there. When in the same canto, to give another example of this, in the same canto, Arjuna finally comes back from Dwaraka after being gone for a very long time. When the Kurukshetra battle was over, Yudhisthira was installed on the throne, Grandfather Bhishma had passed, everything was set up. Now Krishna was, because his purpose was accomplished. He's returning back to Dwarka. Nobody in Dwarka, nobody in Hastinapur wants him to go. So they tried to prevent him from going, but finally he goes, and he goes back to Dwarka. So Arjuna was sent as a representative of the Pandavas to go with Krishna and basically give us a report, check out the scene, and give us a report, what's next. Maybe the royal family wants to know, right? They didn't have telephones and email and fax machines, so you just send Arjuna. He'll give you a report. So Arjuna left and didn't come back. He didn't come back for months. And the Pandavas started to get. I mean, these are royal families. They knew what happened. Something bad happened. And no word at all came back. So when finally Arjuna does return, and he describes the calamity, but first he describes it indirectly, because he just can't even say it. The whole Yadu dynasty is annihilated. And what he describes is that in Krishna's absence, he then took the position of protecting the wives of Krishna. That's a lot of wives to look after, but he took that responsibility. So one day they were walking outside the palace, and some cowherd boys were there, herding cows with their sticks and the whole thing. And they started teasing the wives. So he tried to repel them. And they defeated him. And so he comments to Yudhisthira, I, who was able to defeat the strongest of kings in an empowered way, empowered by Krishna to carry out that, yet later in another circumstance, I couldn't even repel these little scrawny guys with their cowherding sticks. Why? Because the ability to do anything comes from Krishna. So Sanjaya's ability to sit in Dhritarashtra's tent and describe to him the whole battle scene and the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, that was possible because he was empowered to do so. And he was able to not get a clue of what Dhritarashtra was going to do, because forgetfulness was supplied by the same person. Mrtak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. The same person who gives knowledge also gives forgetfulness. So we're dependent upon Krishna, and Krishna wanted that this benefit come to Dhritarashtra. So if Sanjaya had a clue what was going to happen, it would have been really tough for Dhritarashtra to go and do what he had to do. So forgetfulness, he couldn't figure it out. Yeah.
Two more questions.
Yeah.
Why was
he Gandhari
unequal and blindfolded? And the second question is
why was she blindfolded?
And why did you say she was unequal?
It's an unequal chest.
Why did she put a blindfold on herself?
Was she blindfolded? And
she did it herself.
Unequal or something.
Let's do the first one, because I don't understand the second
unequal
one.
Unequal chastity. Chast.
I know what the word chastity means. Let me just do the first. What Gandhari put the blindfold on, because there's a very, very, she's a glorious, it's an exhibition of her glorious quality. She was the daughter of a king. She was a highly qualified lady, and the arrangement was made that she would be married to Dhritarashtra. She accepted the arrangement. As soon as she found out that he was blind, she didn't say, oh, forget it. Suggest another one, please. She said, she immediately understood that her position in being faithful to her husband is that it would be very compromised position for her to have something that her husband didn't have, to have this ability that her husband didn't have. So she blindfolded herself. And through this blindfolding herself, this is one of the things that helped her become extremely powerful. There's detail later of when she removed her blindfold, she was going to protect her son from being able to be killed. Anyway, that's another Mahabharata. So she did that to not place herself in a superior position to her husband. And then the other one was?
Why was she unequal?
Unequaled in her chastity. Well, in every step of life, although her husband, she assisted her husband, and yet she virtuously, she knew what he was doing, and she tried her best to give him advice, and yet she didn't abandon him at any stage, and up to the very, very end. She, on her own, she could have gone back to her father and, you know, whatever. Been without this person who was doing these bad, but she was in her position as the faithful wife of her husband through thick and thin. Prabhupada told one story. Anyway, it's a long, I won't, it's a long story. Describing how the virtue of a woman is her chastity to her husband, and how one woman prevented the sun from setting on the strength of her chastity to her husband. Anyway, long story. Okay? Anything else? I don't see any other hands up. Go ahead.
Self-realized, and if so, how come he had feelings of lamentation towards?
It's natural. His feelings of lamentation were not material. His feelings of lamentation were that here is actually a very exalted personality whose association I will no longer have. So he was exhilarated in that he knew that his elder brother had achieved an exalted state. He was very joyful for that. And some feelings of lamentation that now this elevated soul will no longer have the opportunity to associate with him. Yes.
Was Vidura aware that he was Yamaraj during this time, or was he under forgetfulness?
There's no indication that I know of that he knew that was his identity.
I ask that question because it seems like he was so forgiving of his brother, making so many mistakes, not listening to his advice, and yet still kept after him to do whatever he was. Like Yamaraj forgiving, being a judge, it seems like he would have judged his brother well.
See, this is the point that you're bringing, the comment that you're making raises a point that Prabhupada speaks about. In his role as Yamaraj, Yamaraj's business is not to be forgiving. Yamaraj's business is to be a judge. Guilty, not guilty, so many days in the rock pile. Go into this, you know, species of life and that's it, next. But such a position is a thankless position. Nobody comes up and says, "Oh, thanks, Yamaraj, for awarding me an insect body, an animal body, or whatever." So he desires very much. This is how Prabhupada explains within the Bhagavatam. He's a great devotee of the Lord, so he desires some opportunity where he can exhibit that quality of compassion that a devotee naturally has. He wants to preach. But he was restricted by the service that he had. So, therefore, when he was cursed by Manduk Muni to take birth as a Shudra in this world, great. Because now he could have that opportunity to show the special kind of compassion that a devotee of the Lord has. And so he exhibited that with perfect discretion, for perfect discrimination, like Yamaraj. Perfect discrimination, perfect understanding of right and wrong. There's a number of places in Mahabharata where Dharmaraj or Yamaraj appears in disguise and tests the virtue of Yudhisthira. But actually, his uncle is the same Yamaraj. You know that little, when we went to New Vrindavan and heard that narration of Sankirtan Das, kind of a summary of Mahabharata. So he portrayed that, yeah. And also the dog was, but it actually was Yamaraj testing him, and also going to the lake and finding that each of the Pandavas being tested, but Yamaraj passed the test. And he disclosed that it was actually his father, just testing his religiosity. So that same personality was Vidura. But in the role of a preacher and one who became, even Yamaraj, he became perfect by associating with Maitreya. Perfected his realization of the personality of Godhead. Perfect in his realization of the personality of Godhead.
Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that Ashtanga Yoga is very difficult, so follow the regulative principles.
Yeah.
And how come Dhritarashtra followed Ashtanga Yoga and reached Krishna?
He didn't reach Krishna. He didn't reach Krishna. The position that Dhritarashtra reached was he realized his qualitative oneness. In other words, he became completely detached from the material conception of life. And he identified himself positively. There is some discussion, the word nirguna is there. So he was no longer nirguna, no longer in touch with the modes of nature. He fully identified himself in a qualitative way with the Supreme. And in that condition he left his body. That means he contacted Brahman or the Brahman Jyoti. But he didn't positively engage in activities of service, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam. He didn't do that. So he didn't achieve Krishna's association. Different attainments.
So what Vidura heard from Maitreya,
yeah,
was different from what Arjuna heard from?
No. But the difference of why Dhritarashtra did what he did and why Arjuna did what he did is they had different qualifications. Vidura, it's explicit that Vidura recognized that Dhritarashtra was less qualified. Just like we might say to somebody, you should smoke less cigarettes. If they're addicted to smoking cigarettes. Somebody else we might say, you know, some, the higher instruction than that one. So Dhritarashtra didn't get the higher instruction. He got the instruction, leave your attachments. Before you leave your body attached, leave behind your attachments and bring your attention to the Supreme. Because that's all that that much he could accomplish, and he did accomplish it. But throughout his life, had he, like Yudhisthira Maharaj, had he throughout his whole life simply dedicated himself in service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a different instruction would have come from Vidura, like the instruction Krishna gave to Arjuna. So that means the practice in our lifetime, if we practice activities of devotion, to whatever degree we're capable of doing that, it gives us adhikar, it gives us qualification or eligibility for going back to Godhead. Far more so than if we're a powerful person, a great king, or whatever in this world. And to maintain it by crooked means and devious tactics and bad behavior. Dhritarashtra.
Even after like hearing the the Bhagavad Gita from Sanjaya,
yeah, exactly.
So is that why he is not qualified? Like even if Vidura says the message of Bhagavad Gita, he could not understand that.
Yeah, that's right. Didn't have the qualification. So practices, once again, just taking the holy name of the Lord and chanting on a daily basis, offering all of your foods to the Supreme Lord on a daily basis, hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam on a daily basis. Those very simple activities. How difficult are those activities? Children can perform, anyone can perform. In any language, regardless of birth, anyone can perform. They're very simple. And by performing those activities, one's mind becomes purified, one's senses become controlled, progressively one becomes spiritually elevated, just by those very simple activities. It brings eligibility to an otherwise disqualified soul. Okay, so thank you very much for coming, for inviting everybody. All of you who come, thank you. And we'll have our tea ceremony now, yeah? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.